Joe Rogan Podcast, check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
Oh, sweetness. Tommy Buns What's in up, the man? Fucking house, ladies and gentlemen.
It's good
Tommy,
to be back.
It's good to have you, buddy. We're about to just talk nonsense and go through a commercial, and Tommy Buns hits me with, "Do you believe in evolution?" Oh, I do.
I like throwing heavy-handed questions at people, man.
That's a fucking right-hand bomb to open the round.
Well, it's just funny to me because I was watching this thing about, and this guy was like, this guy fucking believes that evolution should be taught in the classrooms? And it was like a political ad like that, and I was right. like, what the fuck? Like that appeals to somebody that are like, yeah, fuck that guy. He thinks evolution should be taught? This guy's a fucking asshole. You're like, really? Like, there's actually enough people that believe, like, I'm not a science expert, so I don't want anyone to think like,
wait a minute,
oh, you're about to
you're not a science expert.
I know. I mean,
what point do you become an expert? Because if you were just you and you lived in the 1400s, you'd be a fucking science expert.
You're probably right.
They'd be like, electricity is God's way of showing you his anger. You're like, well, no, actually it's just some shit that's
actually,
formed by
from
the clouds in the atmosphere.
And my president,
you'd be a fucking scientist. You could explain so much shit to these people.
Well, actually, I would just know it and not know how to explain it. They would just be like,
you'd draw it.
Like, no, the Earth's round, and they'd be like, how do you know? I'd be like, because I've seen pictures.
You would be work with those people for a couple days, and you'd be so annoyed. You're like, listen, you have to listen to me. I'm your new king, and I'm going to show you how to build an airplane. You would just, they'd be like, an airplane? What the fuck are you talking about? Get some wood. Get some wood. I'm going to show you. This has got to be straight like that. Think like a bird, but then with the tail up
and
in the air.
There's air draft from above and below.
People would go, where did you get this idea from? I don't know, man. They just come to me. You draw like bows and arrows
does that
for
mean,
them.
Like Da Vinci was like from the future and went to the past?
I think Da Vinci
he had too many ideas.
Yeah. You know what people love to say when there's a guy like Da Vinci?
What?
They go, and I wanted to just say it, just out of instinct. It's probably had like Asperger's or something.
Oh,
probably
like
autistic.
They always
want to say something like that, like that there's no way you could be.
Something's off with that guy.
That brilliant and not be fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not willing to believe it. You know?
I don't think that, I mean, keeping like, I almost agree that like, I don't think you could go up to Da Vinci and be like, how do you like your eggs, man? And he'd be like, you know, actually, like, I think he would be talking about all kinds of weird shit.
He would be like thinking about what you would look like if you cleaved you in half and pulled you on. And could he draw those two sides?
Do you want to donate your body like today? And you're like, no, I'm not dead yet.
Did you ever see that exhibit, that Body Works exhibit?
Yes.
Where they take human bodies?
We went together.
Yeah, that's right.
It's crazy.
That shit is creepy as fuck, dude. And they were stopping us from taking pictures, remember?
Yeah.
They told us to put our phones away. I had to take camera pictures on the sneak tip.
Yeah.
Yeah, with like no flash.
The horse. Kind of, remember the horse? They had this like real horse that had been like.
Well, what was fucked up was that if you did this, if you haven't seen it, folks, the Body Works exhibit is an exhibit where they take a bunch of dead bodies and through some new method of somehow or another coating them with plastic and infusing plastic into the muscles, it doesn't change the appearance, but it completely stops them from decaying. So it's really creepy.
And they give you different
layers.
Yeah. Of that. So they give you like full
like they have
muscle.
An abortion cut.
Well,
into
that's
like seven
yeah.
pieces.
That's what's really fucked up is the clinical aspect of the dissection of the bodies on display was a little disturbing because it was almost like butcher-esque. It's like if this was a guy's basement, you would want him locked up forever. Okay, this guy would be one of the most horrific serial killers and twisted fucks ever.
Ever.
Even if he was a grave robber and he did this, you would want this motherfucker locked up forever. But you can do it, and somehow because you've involved plastic, which means that it's been like government sanctioned or something, now you can just display these dead bodies and people can come and pay. Like, where did you get these bodies exactly? I mean, it's not even like under like heavy scrutiny.
Yeah, some of them had like bullet wounds or something.
Some
in
with
them.
Bullet holes.
Is that exhibit even still around? It's got a smell by now.
The one that I saw it in Vegas. It was at, I think it was at the Luxor.
Yeah.
You saw it in Vegas?
Yeah, and at
that
the
would be
end,
too much sadness for one day.
Right? That's depressing.
At the end, they said that all the bodies in that exhibit were from China.
Yeah.
Wow.
They were all Chinese. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's scary, because when you're from a country that has been known to do some really horrific things to like prisoners and shit, and
pretty questionable track record when it comes to human rights.
Well, there doesn't seem to be that there's that many of them in China, and so or rather that there's too many of them in China.
Yeah,
that there's so many people that so many. In some areas the overpopulation has gotten to a point where they've sort of devalued life in a lot of ways. I mean, when you start hearing the stories about them, you know, forcing them to only have one child, and so there's terrible stories of families drowning Chinese girls.
Ugh.
I mean, it's really horrific because they want a boy.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just fucking crazy.
And you know,
but I don't know if that's propaganda though. So I really, honestly, shouldn't be.
Well, I know outside of the major cities, there's a lot of like out in the countryside, which is hundreds of millions of people. There's extreme poverty. There's extreme literacy. There's, you know, there's not any healthcare or anything. It's just the hundreds of millions of people outside of the major cities.
Yeah. It's when you, I mean, that kind of poor. I mean, we just haven't figured that out yet. I don't think most Americans have really like put that into their head, like that level, the level of poverty that exists in other countries.
We have extreme poverty, but it's, you know, there's it's not like really what you see.
Yeah,
in third world.
We have horrific poverty, but even just existing in a welfare state is way better than a giant chunk of the world has access to. You know, if you think about like what it would be like if you just had a shit roll of the dice and you wound up in Nigeria.
Yeah,
you're a baby in Nigeria, and it's just flies and mosquitoes and malarias, and a dude's got a hyena on a chain, and you're like, what the fuck?
Would you?
Most of Africa is fucking
crazy.
Really,
it's a wild, crazy place, man.
Yeah. I just got back from there.
Did you really?
I was just in South Africa.
Oh, that's right. You were doing gigs out there.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Was it
so cool? People were so nice.
Yeah,
crowds were fucking awesome. And then I met other Africans that were in South Africa, and I learned like that's the destination. Like if you live in Botswana, Mozambique, Namibia, you go like, I want to go to South Africa. That is the crown jewel of the, 'cause that's the most developed, like by far. And like when I was in a casino walking through it with this comic who was from, I think he was from he's from Nigeria or somewhere, I don't know, Mozambique, I think. And I was like, so what's like, you know, your country like? He was like, man, he's like, you know how you picture Africa? And I was like, yeah. He's like, that's what it's like. Like, it's fucking open terrain and animals and tribal shit. And he goes, this shit right here, the casino, the only thing like this in my country is like where the king lives.
Wow.
Like, that's it. There's no shit like this at all.
That's got to be so weird to have one city that's like on top of the ball and everything else is just barely keeping it together.
Barely
keeping it together.
Yeah. It was, it was an awesome experience. People were.
What are the crowds like?
So good. Very like mixed crowds and just juiced for the shows. I mean, I would say out of 15.
How'd your black goat jokes go?
Fucking killed.
They understand American black humor?
Totally.
Yeah. Really?
They got it. They totally get it.
They got everything.
They got everything, man.
Wow.
Did you find
them to be like into like harsh material? Are they just?
It was interesting. All the local guys, we saw a bunch of some South African comics, and a lot of them have very political material. And because it's a very politically charged atmosphere, you know, you think about that, like they got democracy in 94, so it's kind of like us, you know, you just fast forward, like, you know, like the 60s and 70s were really politically charged in America, right? And then you know, theirs is like, it's fresh, so that's what everybody talks about. They talk about politics and things going on, but it's like South African politics. And then we go in and we'll talk about the mundane, like just silly, like observational shit. And some of the local guys were saying that like that's so unusual for them, like that somebody would just talk about some like small observation they made, because it's all about making an impact with like your observation about what's really going on in the world or in the country right now, you know.
So everybody's a preacher.
I mean, there's a lot. He said that like you can go to like go to a stand-up show in South Africa that's all locals, and they'll all hit on political shit. He said that's not uncommon at all.
That's interesting. Is it funny? Did you find it funny?
There's this guy, David Cow, is a South African comic, and he was fucking tremendous.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know what, like, he was like, you know when somebody's really good and you don't necessarily get the reference, but uh-huh. you laugh anyways? Like, you don't even, you're like, you don't know, like, I don't even know what that was.
Right, right, right.
But you still laugh?
Just because he's just timing, he's yeah, just funny.
It was like that. And wow. he fucking devastated the place.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he was so, but he was all, like, it was all about South, like, current shit in South Africa.
Wow.
And it was like, it was, you know.
I wonder if that would translate, like, if he did the U.S.
I think it's, I don't think it would. I don't think the act would. But I think he's good enough where he would just need to figure come out, here and yeah. he just figure it out. He
well, that was something right. that never happened with the Boston guys. There was a bunch of guys from Boston that Boston, like no other place, does like local material. Like my first 20 minutes was all local mm-hmm. material because you knew it would work. It was like almost sure. like it was. First of all, there was a lot of really funny shit about Boston, and yeah. people from Boston love laughing about Boston.
Yeah.
So that, like, everybody that was, like, really strong had such a Boston-centric act. Like, Steve Sweeney in Boston, I'll put him up there with the greatest stand-up performances of all time. I'm really? Telling you, Steve Sweeney in Boston in the 80s used to lay them down, dude. Yeah, just yeah. boom, like he was bowling strikes, crushing with this Boston material. And he's just such a funny guy. He's just such a funny guy, and he had been through the hard Boston club scene for, mm-hmm. you know, over a decade before yeah. I ever saw him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was just a bad motherfucker.
Yeah.
And that guy, you know, when he would go to California, he would lose, like, a big chunk of his act.
Sure.
Because he couldn't talk about that shit anymore. It was so frustrating to me. It was like, man, you could do that about anything.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you could hit that level of comedy,
yeah.
he could do that with anything.
Yeah. That's the thing about that. Everybody thought this, by the way. We'd all, because I was there. Christina was on the show, too. Finesse Mitchell, Ian Bagg, Mitch Vitale, Brian Hayner, and we all watched David and we're like, he just goes to the States
wow.
and fucking, like, you know, he'd need to work like kind of week after week.
Right.
And just if he did that for just a few months, he would put together a stellar fucking act, I'm sure.
Well, I think now, especially because of the internet, the guys that are coming up over the next 10 years, there's a lot of good guys.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of these good young up and coming stand-ups, they've had a chance to see so many good acts
yeah.
online, so that even if they're in their area and their area is not so good,
mm-hmm.
you know, like there's all, I'm not mentioning names, but there's some places you'll go and like, oh, he's the funniest local guy, you yeah. should have him open for you, and you have the guy open for you and he's fucking deaf,
yeah,
just nonsense sure. and just bad hacky tricks, and you're like, oh Christ. But if you're in that community, all you really need is stage time.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got like access to, you know, you can watch the Kinison archives, you can see Bill Hicks stuff, you can see Stanhope, you yeah. can see David Tell, you can see Norton, you can see all these different comics online, you could sort of get at, what do you enjoy? What do you enjoy? Yeah. I know you don't enjoy what that guy's doing.
Right.
So it's instead of thinking about like the hacky stuff that's in your neighborhood, you have access to all this stuff. Whereas, like, in the 80s when I started out, there was no access to that other than, like, CDs and cassettes. It wasn't as immediate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was way more difficult to sort of create a scene or to, you know, to get good without, like, a good scene around you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I think because I always feel like I'm only as good as the guys that I see around me on a regular basis and the guys that I perform with on
oh,
a regular
yeah.
basis.
Yeah, so if you're stuck somewhere where you don't see a lot of good shit, it yeah. definitely would affect your game.
Yeah, because yeah. like when I see someone really good, like when Stanhope's in town, or when I see Diaz go up and kill, or you know, Attell or some, you know, someone I really respect, when I see their act, I get so charged up. It gives me energy yeah. to
inspiring.
Go make things.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely is.
Yeah, that little juice, that little squirt of just some push to get you forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like so important for
nothing
us.
Nothing like seeing great stand when you're a stand-up. You know, you see somebody great right at the show you're at, and you're like, fuck, man.
I'm not a fan of watching stand-up. Like,
really?
I like when I'm at the comedy clubs, I try not to watch anybody.
I don't watch a lot of stand-up,
yeah.
but I do, like, if I know there's somebody either I want to see, you know, or somebody I know, and I'm like, oh, like a friend of mine or somebody who's like, you know, this person's really good,
yeah.
I don't sit through whole shows, but I'll watch that person, and sometimes it is like, man, that's fucking so exciting. You get pumped up about it. You're like, that's awesome. You get like it makes you want to work.
Yeah. I could watch Joey Diaz do a thousand sets in a row.
Probably.
Well, yeah, there's definitely certain people, but like if I'm like, you know, at the Improv or whatever, the Ice House, and there's like all these comics going up, I don't like sitting there watching them because it seems like to me I'm too scared of going there and then having that like something in the back of my head from somebody else, or it seems like that's really easy to do.
I get bored and I get anxiety when I sit around and I'm just watching like a... just comic after comic who I'm not.
You get anxiety? About.
I get like, oh, man, I can't sit here right now. Like, what? I just get like, I gotta get up. I can't sit through this. If I think it's like, if I sit and it's like, I'm a minute in and I'm like, oh, this is not good. I have to get up and leave.
You can't watch bad stand-up is what you're saying.
I can't do it, man.
So you can watch like Louis C.K.
for fucking hours.
But you can't watch a bunch of like, I will not say any names, but there's a certain group of people that, you know, you've seen them do stand up and you're never going to understand it, but yet they're still bumping around, mm-hmm. and you might like be in the back of the room one day and they're on stage and you almost have a heart attack.
Fucking up and out.
You got to get out of the room they'll infect you.
I think, yeah, they will.
Well, do you know there's a real thought behind that? This sounds crazy, but it's with schizophrenics, something happens to schizophrenics, and I believe it's called allophrenia, and it's a very rare situation where people will go to visit crazy people mm-hmm. and become crazy while they visited them.
Really?
Yeah. And they don't know they don't know exactly what it is, and they think it might be hormonal. It might be might be something in the way you interact with this person, but it has happened before mm-hmm. where people have gone in to visit people who are fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And they, all of a sudden, people are like, we're going to have to keep an eye on you. Mm-hmm. And then, boom.
So like, it's just like almost by like the association with that person.
It could be that they were just always crazy as fuck. Nobody but it could just be pulled like it out of
there. You're with them. It's almost like when you, what's it called? When you like Stockholm syndrome, where you start to like, you start to sympathize with your kidnapper.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, it's like you, there's a certain exposure to that person that starts to affect you. Like on a deeper level.
I don't know enough about how humans affect each other to really.
When I was in college, I was in Psych 101. Our teacher, one day, we were talking about, you know, you're going through all the basics, and then he gets to schizophrenia, and he's like, okay, he writes it on the board. He's like, schizophrenia is the worst thing that could ever happen to you. And then this kid in his class, in our class, raises his hand, and he's like, yep. And he's like, I have schizophrenia. I don't think it's the worst thing that could ever happen. And we were all like, oh, you just pissed off the schizophrenic guy. Wow. And then he's like, well, what I meant was there are different stages of schizophrenia. And that the worst one is the worst thing that could happen to you. Which one do you have? Like, do you have? And he's like, oh, I have like a less, like, you know, severe. And he's like, oh yeah, that's not what I meant. But
nice.
It'd be really bad.
Nice backpedal.
I'm trying to find the name of this thing that where it's happened before. So the rare case of people who've visited schizophrenics, but I can't seem to find it. So I might be talking a little bit of shit because I'm just repeating some things that I think it was Terrence McKenna lecture. But the idea was that one of the things that they think about some people when they start to lose their mind mm-hmm. is that it becomes a pheromonal problem where they're giving off this weird smell to people, like this you know, this what is a, you know, how would you describe a pheromone, a hormonal smell, I guess, and people treat them weird. It's offensive. Really? People treat them odd, and they start thinking like, am I odd, am I crazy? And that tipping point is like really not that hard to do on some people.
Really?
Yeah, because if you think about how you interact with people, I'm sure you've had times in your life where you've been socially awkward, or you felt like mm-hmm. real weird, or felt like real vulnerable, especially when you were young. Brian, you barely got one correct sentence yesterday with Kat Von D.
Come on, the arm.
I looked over. He came in his pants three times. He's like sitting there.
How are you doing today so far?
I keep on thinking about her. She's beautiful.
I met with me.
The
asshole.
Picture of you hugging her was just like, you're just in bliss. You're like, oh. You're like, he was like, I'm actually touching her.
I like girls that think like that. Like the energy thing she said about, you know.
Yes.
Like, I love girls that think like that.
She's a very nice person. And she's incredibly artistic. Yeah. She's a badass bitch.
So many fast.
She's really nice too, man. She's really nice. Like legit nice. Like not a bullshit nice. Just a nice person. Mm. Yeah. It's nice when you see someone that's trying to do that. That's trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, it's rad, bro.
Where'd you get that from?
From Kat Von D. From watching.
Is that how she talks?
I think so.
Wow, what are you trying to say?
Do it again.
You don't think Kat Von D is hot? Are you saying something?
I think she's
disparaging?
Hot. I said I watched her show. I watched every episode of her show.
Look, yeah, man.
Look me in the eyes.
That's not what she sounds like.
Totally what she sounds like to me.
Do it again, but look me in the eyes.
I want to play with your dick, Red Man.
Is that your impression for everybody? Like, what's Spider-Man sound like?
it's sticky in my hand.
That's a sucky impression, dude. That's terrible.
I thought that was fucking spot on.
Really?
Yeah.
Do Bert Kreischer.
He's so silly.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's how you guys are about the time.
No, I'm a big fan of Kat Von D. I watched every episode of that show.
Really?
Absolutely.
Did you see Eddie Bravo episode?
Probably missed that one, but the other ones I caught.
Why is me, man?
What's with the ringtone fucking AT&T commercial?
You gave me shit about mine, too, because I have it on that. I have the same thing.
Why?
I don't change my ringtones. Anything you want. I just want to know if someone's calling. Okay, that's all I want to know, Brian. I don't really give a fuck what it sounds like.
Kat Von D,
like.
I love you. Just listen.
Whoa, Brian.
Hey.
Stop him. He's taking your girl.
That's not cool.
He just said, Kat Von D, I love you.
That's not
that
cool.
That is so not cool. Like, listen, you don't understand what it was like for Lil Bri yesterday.
Really?
You don't understand.
It's adorable.
You want to hear my new ringtone?
Is it Kat?
Yes. Unicorn, soaring through the stars, okay, stop that.
It's terrible, man.
You really? I need to find out what happened to you that froze you in 12.
Did you spend some time with the schizophrenic person yesterday?
There was some strange moment when you were 12 and you just stuck there emotionally.
It's better than that ringtone. How do you even know if it's your phone if it's ringing?
I don't give a fuck.
You just check.
How about that? How about I don't give a fuck?
You should sell ringtones, man. Because I was going through the ringtone store, and the top 10 ones are so dumb. Like, Space Unicorn was the best one, and I was just really stoned. But there's, like, one that's just, like, a black guy going, yo, man, answer your phone!
Answer your motherfucking phone, motherfucker!
That's what I want. I want a white guy doing a bad black guy.
How is that bad, too?
Just if you're in, like, a really black area, and you hear the phone going, answer your phone, motherfucker!
Yeah.
Answer your phone! Pick up your phone, bitch!
You don't think my impression of a black voice is good?
That's a good ringtone, right?
I think it was okay. It was okay. It was a little racist.
What? Jesus Christ.
Just kidding.
Did it again.
Kidding completely. I only said that because it was the funniest thing to say.
Okay.
I don't think you're racist by any stretch of the imagination. But I put what some people thought was a racist tweet the other day. I wrote, I saw a black guy with a Mitt Romney bumper sticker on his car.
Mm-hmm.
I go, the Mayans were right. This fucking thing is over.
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous. This black
guy had a racist piece of shit.
And all of a sudden people were saying I'm a racist piece of shit.
How is that racist?
I don't know.
I don't know enough about Mitt Romney to know if there was a joke in there about him and black people.
My question is, what black guys are relating to Mitt Romney?
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's going to get you some more tweets.
I need to look. I wish there was another alternative because I'm not really happy with either one of these guys. It seems silly to me. I feel like socially Obama's way better. The way he communicates is better. He's way smarter. He's way more moderate.
He's more
way more reasonable.
I'd rather hang out with him.
Way
than
more
Mitt.
Impressive. Fuck yeah, I'd way rather hang out with Obama. But what
cool
bums me out is that it seems like, fuck, look at all the shit that got passed while Obama was in office. I don't know how much of that had to do with him. It's so hard to believe that a young guy, just a few years older than me, would be so willing to give in to this ridiculous idea that giving the government more power over the people is necessary to keep us safe.
Yeah.
Because I think that's just total horseshit. I just think they want to lock it down. And they're slowly eroding our rights. And they're doing it in a very unconstitutional way. And that's not the way to do your job. Your job is to do it within a constitutional way. And if you can't keep us safe in a constitutional way, it means you suck at your fucking job. You need to get better at that. But what you don't need to do is look at everybody's fucking email and listen to everybody's voicemail messages and track everybody's movement through GPS. And you don't need to do all that. This is crazy. Because who decides who has access to that information? Who decides? You know, people could harass you because you have different political beliefs than them, or you're interrupting their campaign. That, you know, there's a lot of different things that someone could do if they have influence, if they have enough power over you, by being able to track your whereabouts and listening to all your phone calls. That shit is ridiculous. And the fact that that's happening in America, man, that's what we always used to make fun of the Soviet Union about. That, you know, everybody was being a spy and spied on. And but we never thought that shit was going on over here. But meanwhile, the government just opens up the floodgates and it's all of us. It's so gross.
And didn't you retweet that somebody? I didn't even know about this, and it amazes me that that this happens and nobody knows that they audited the Fed, and that they found out that the bailout amounts were not even close.
It was trillions of dollars in secret bailouts,
and that certain companies were getting trillions, not even what we. We're told they were getting, let's say, $50 billion. You're like, Jesus, you got $50 billion? Yeah. No, they got, $1.3 trillion.
Yeah, it's insane.
And that was, it was in the news, but, I feel like nobody really, they were like, oh, yeah, that's what happened.
I don't get it, man. I don't understand it, how any of it flies. The whole idea that first of all, the whole idea that the only way to fix all this shit is to take more money from us is fucking berserk.
Yeah.
That is so bonkers. That's the stupidest idea ever. It's like you're telling me that you just have to, no matter what, keep these defense budgets the way they are now. That's what they're saying, essentially. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're saying, look, we're not going to shrink that. So let's just concentrate
on whacking
some things off and some other. It's this giant chunk of money is being thrown at this ridiculous situation, this horrific situation, rather. And no, I can't fix that. That is just what it is. You know, we'll cut that a little bit. Yeah. We're going to cut that a little bit. Yeah. We got no money for pizza in school, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's the idea that, you know, when you're going to need a little bit more from everybody. Like, no, you don't. You need to stop spending money on shit that we don't want you to spend money on. What the fuck? Where's the money going?
And nobody, the thing is, not only defense, but nobody is ever really willing to make concessions. Nobody wants to give up whatever their cause is or whatever their committee they sit on. Just go somewhere else. So you end up finding a group of people that are all agreeing to not make any deals. Like, no, just take from somebody else, just not us. And it goes around the circle, and then you're like, all right, that was fun. Fucking nobody made any concessions at all.
First of all, the only way we're going to fix this whole world problem is we're going to have to be able to read each other's minds. People are just too full of shit. Language is just one step on an never-ending process of getting closer and closer to each other. Mm-hmm. Language is the ability to do it in expression, and you say what you comes out of your mouth. I know what you're saying. I know who you are. You talk. I know who you are. We're going to be able to get past that. That's what the next step is. The next step is we're going to be able to read each other's minds. And until then, we're going to have a really hard time with this fucking thing, because people are full of shit and people misinterpret people's words and people are touchy and people don't know why they're really mad. And, you know, there's a lot of the problems with normal human communication.
Yeah.
And part of it is I can only gauge your intent by guesswork. I can only gauge your intent by how you respond, guesswork, and then, you know, you put it into the computer that is your brain and try to figure out if this person is good for my life, is this person bad for my life, is this person my friend, are they looking out for me? Eventually, we're going to just read each other's minds. That's all going to be bullshit. You're going to know who's a cunt.
Yeah.
Cunts are going to know they're cunts. They're going to have to straighten up. It's going to be like a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
But you're also going to know, you know, all the creepy shit about people. Mm-hmm. we're going to definitely get past the idea that the only way I can communicate is through some noise, some mouth noise, and some text messages.
Just looking at somebody, you think?
Well, look at the interface of text messaging. I mean, look at how that's already you've already got this new way to communicate with people that are nowhere near you.
Yeah,
you know, so you're getting a little bit of their information, a little bit of their personality, a little bit of their mind through this little text that's coming in on your phone.
Yeah.
Well, eventually, that's gonna morph into the next thing. whatever the fuck it is. It's going to be people that let you ride along, where you could tap into their consciousness and you could walk around with them and shit.
Yeah.
I don't see that being outside the realm of possibility. I think that's totally possible, that you could eventually get to a point where a person interfaces with some sort of an internet connection in maybe something that you would wear in your head that stimulates various parts of the brain with electrical impulses or something that can, you know, trigger certain experiences. If they figure out how to really wire that, maybe they'll actually have to fucking drill some holes in your head and shit and put little conductors that you have to screw shit into. But people would totally do it if you could actually work that out.
Probably.
And ride along with each other.
Yeah.
Like, you could go, if you were a real freak, you know, like those dudes like watching their wives fuck other guys.
Yeah.
They could like be their wife while she gets fucked by this giant black guy.
Yeah, yeah. Wife's gotta be black.
Because that's scariest. The big guy's one, but big black guy's the scariest. Or that's maybe like what his thing. Wasn't that like cuckolds? Is that what they call them?
Yeah. Mm.
Guys who like watching other guys fuck their wives in front of them. That's interesting. That's to me.
Sure is. And that's the real fucking, that's the exciting point for them. Like, this guy's about to drill my wife. This is fucking awesome.
Oh, that's so crazy.
Yep. And they wanted her to get fucking hammered. You know?
But how can that end in anything other than murder-suicide? Can it?
I don't know, but I was just thinking you could never switch it. You could never fuck a girl in front of your wife and she's just sitting there brushing her hair really, you know, slow. And
I don't think so, unless she was crazy.
Yeah.
But it's not normal that a guy would sit there and get off on that.
Hell
either.
No, that's not normal at all.
Yeah,
man.
Some guys are just real freaks.
Yeah, but there's everything, you know. I mean, shit.
That's well put. There's everything. That really is what the answer is. And we didn't really know that as much when we were kids. That's why you were subject to get accosted by like some predator.
Yeah.
Because you never knew any predators. So we didn't have access to nearly as much information.
Yeah. The internet really exposes you.
Fuck yeah. And every kid knows about pedos now.
Yeah.
They got a pedo bear.
Mm.
You know? I mean, pedos weren't something that everybody talked about when I was a kid. It was like, you keep away from that man. He's a bad man.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, who's the bad guy? That bad guy over there?
Why is he bad?
The guy by the park.
I don't understand why he's bad. Yeah.
Nobody understood why. Now kids know and about pedophiles.
Now you understand like, how many kinks there are. Like, there's all these, you go online.
Yeah.
Subcategories of shit, and you're like, that's a thing, really?
Yeah. Oh my god.
You're just exposed to it all. And so we're like adults now, but you realize that like if you look back on like fifth grade you, he's aware of that. 10-year-olds are online.
Well, there's all these
like, oh, there's this shit? Okay.
There was always specialty things. There was always like but it was hard to find them. Like if you were gonna be into weird freak shit.
Yeah.
Like some dudes are into feet.
Yeah.
And there were actual feet magazines.
Yeah, nice.
I found a feet porno magazine with my friends.
Can I have it?
In the woods.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, can I have it? We were wandering through the woods, and we found a pile of magazines, like in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
And if you found them in the woods, they were almost 60% of the time they were porn.
Right.
If you found a dude who went to read magazines in the woods, there was a lot of people that would go and they would just go beat off in the woods.
That's
man.
That's so great. I love that. Dudes that go to read magazines in the woods.
And they left their stash back there. So we would go find their stash. And so it was me and my two friends. And as they were opening the pages, my friend, there were two. One dude was from Argentina. The other dude was from Cuba.
Yeah.
And we're in Florida. And we're peeling back these pages. And this kid stops and he goes, man, I think this shit is just dicks and feet.
That's the quote of the day, ladies and gentlemen.
And it was one of the first times I had ever saw anybody like so clearly say what the fuck when they don't really want an answer.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
That you know, when you say like what the fuck.
Yeah. You don't really
It was just like, what the fuck? Like he knew, I didn't know. I knew he didn't know. We were 11. We're looking at like dudes jerking off on feet.
Yeah. I guess the whole thing. I've been wanting that to be a thing. I didn't know it was.
I found the creepiest new fetish out yesterday. It's called belly punching.
Where
it's just guys and girls punching other girls in the belly really hard.
Really?
And they get off on it.
I don't want to watch that, man.
Yeah, and the videos are just really disturbing.
I.
It's from Brazil.
Yeah. I don't get off on
it. Please shut that off. That stuff bugs me.
Yeah.
I don't get off on it, but I've seen it, and it was like, it was so extreme that I was like in tears laughing.
What was
of
it?
The ball kicking.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, but so I saw one, and I was like, oh, that's clearly, that guy has a cup on, you know, like you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was genuine, and she was like, she was kicking like 50-yard field goals, like lining up and teeing off, and he was like, oh. His legs were shaking, and then she's like, yes, suffer, and like fucking.
What the fuck is that about?
I don't know, man, but somebody's not watching that like to laugh. They're watching that. That is the most erotic, arousing thing.
I got kicked once so hard in a tournament. I've been kicked many times, but I got kicked once in a tournament where my cup slammed into my balls. And I was fucked up. My balls swole up. They were purple, and they swole up. Like, it swole up, like, twice the size of normal.
Do you have any photos?
What I don't understand how the guy can physically take it.
What'd you say? Do I have what?
Do you have any photos? I would have taken photos of that shit.
I was only, like, 16 or 17.
How did they physically tell? Like, because, like, that obviously affected, were you like, huh? Like,
oh, I was fucked up, man.
I've been kicked in the balls, and it's like, I wouldn't be able to, like, if there was a second kick, I'd just shit myself.
I got a boner on the way home, though, so I was happy. I was happy that it still worked. It was almost like my body was letting me know. That was when I was like 16 or 17, I would get those random boners. I could be walking, and I would just get a complete hard on, like out of nowhere. It's like, what the fuck is this doing here?
It's cool, too.
You didn't know. It's like giving a blind person a gun. Yeah. You know, you're like, what is this, a trigger? you don't know what you're doing when you're a 17-year-old kid just walking around with a boner.
I would crank out so many at 17. Fucking unbelievable.
So ridiculous.
Man.
You're always horny.
Yeah, and then, and like that chamber is fucking reloaded immediately.
Yeah,
like,
immediately. And what's really fucked up is that is probably like one of the biggest shifts as a human being that your life makes, from no sex at all to boom, having a girlfriend when you're in your teenage years, which are confusing as fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, your teenage years are a mess. And in that, you're having relationships, you're making out with people, and your penis is going in a girl's vagina. It's the best you've ever felt in your life.
Yeah.
And she's on the pill, so you can squirt it in her. You get so confused. You get so baffled. You're so fucking twisted, just so absorbed in that person.
And that's why you see so many people that age, like, throw everything else away for that relationship, because they can't. It's also
addict behavior.
Yeah,
we've all been guilty of it.
Sure.
Addict behavior is not just physical addiction. It's just like squirrely thinking. Yeah. You know, addict behavior is like there's a lot of like different activities that shouldn't really exist for our shitty minds, but they do exist.
Mm-hmm.
And people can't help, because of the fact that they have access to casinos, there's certain people that cannot fucking help it.
Yeah.
They're drawn in there, and they want to gamble. They want action. That's what they live for. It's I've seen it. It's craziness. And they'll go on these programs. No, I'm not gambling anymore. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm done. The next thing you know, I'm just going to try a little. I can handle it now. It's all about management. Boom, back in the slide. Crazy, in debt. Never get, and it's not, it's, there's no drugs, there's no dealer, there's no,
just
there's
the,
no poisoning, there's just fucking this weird idea that you need to fucking pull that lever and see those lemons, lemon, give me the fucking money!
I'm so glad I don't have that.
Oh, and then they take that money and go right back in.
It's fucking horrifying.
There was
a
guy named White Plains Charlie, when I was a kid and I used to play pool at Executive Billiards. He was the first guy that I ever met that was an absolute 100% gambling junkie.
Mm-hmm.
This guy didn't do a goddamn thing for a living. He lived off of handouts and games. He would hustle pool.
Yeah.
He slept in like homeless shelters and, you know, in different people's houses, and, you know, had apartments in like real squirrely situations, and he would just come down the pool hall and go to the racetrack. And that's all this guy did.
Yeah.
That's all this guy did. He was always in action.
Fucking ponies.
And he was a sad guy because he was in his like 70s, you know, and he was like, you know, just a really tiny, tiny man.
Yeah.
And people would yell at him, and they'd fucking treat him like shit because he was always broke, and he would yell at them, and he would always lose his money. Shit. Those guys. I almost had those motherfuckers. I'm supposed to have 775. You know, they have some number problem that went wrong on them.
Of course.
You know, that would have paid 2,000. 2,000. Can you believe that shit? I can't tell you how many conversations I had with White Plains Charlie. Well, he would come in there and go, Joe, you ain't going to believe this. They got me at the track again. I'm down there. And I was like, at the time, maybe 22. 23 years old.
Yeah.
So the whole thing to me was just completely baffling. Yeah. I was like, wow, this guy's out of his fucking head.
For sure.
This is crazy. Like, he just can't stop gambling. I've never seen anything like it.
I know a poker guy like that. Ooh, just can't stop.
They can't stop.
Can't stop.
They get sweaty hands. I was completely addicted to playing that Quake game. 100%. You were, huh? 100%. I loved it. Loved it. Loved it. Loved it.
Hours and hours a day.
I didn't. If you were talking and I was listening to you talk and you were boring the shit out of me, I'd be like, why am I spending time doing this when I could be playing Quake and my time would be awesome as always?
Really?
Yeah. I would not want to talk to people. I would want to just sit in front of the computer with the headphones on because you can hear like who's walking on the right hand side. You can hear like footsteps on the right or footsteps on the left.
Yeah.
You have to creep. Because if you walk, you don't make any noise. But if you want to jump, if you want to strafe jump, if you want to run, you make noise.
Yeah.
And I would get addicted, dude. Wandering down hallways, rocket launching people in the heads. It's fun as fuck.
I've been lost in video games before, too.
It's addict behavior.
Yeah, totally.
The real problem is it doesn't make you ultimately feel like you got anything done. Like, if I put the same amount of effort into making podcasts or the same amount of effort into, like, doing stand-up, I feel like I got something done, you know? But if you're just out there fucking throwing squares with numbers around, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're playing cards? What are you doing? There's nothing actually happening.
Yeah.
You're playing Quake. I fucking killed everybody today. Nothing really happened.
No.
Okay? You just got jolted. Nothing was really created.
And 8 hours went by.
You basically gave all your time, you know, to this artificial experience. And, you know, you got an adrenaline rush out of it. It was a lot of fun. It was great. But ultimately, nothing was created. Whereas, like, if you took that same amount of time and you decided, I'm going to draw a picture, or I'm going to paint something, I'm going to write a song, like an actual physical thing manifests itself that people can enjoy, or fucking rocket launchers, lightning bolt guns and shit, and gunning people down. Halo. Yeah. You don't get anything out of that. It's weird.
Is that your game, Halo?
Used to be. I tried to, I step away. I literally forced myself not to get on game systems that much anymore because I would do that and I would do Madden and NCAA.
Madden's fucking supposed to be awesome.
The college one I would play because I like college ball a lot. I would play. You could create a player, you start your team, and then play a season.
Did you make white guys win?
I would make fucking Tom run a 4.340.
Yeah, of course. You would give him ridiculous power.
Absolutely. I'd be like Vikings. 6'3", 230, just fucking yoked. Yeah, absolutely.
Just Vikings.
Vikings,
an absolutely. Army of Brock Lesnar.
I would play the full, I would do the spring thing, spring ball, and then play fucking 12-game season, the conference game, and the bowl game, and then recruit players for the, because you can recruit and recruit them for the next year. And fucking, I'd played, you know, 14 games in a row, and I'm like, holding on for the next season to start, and this is like in one sitting.
Wow.
So yeah, it's hours and hours. Yeah, it's not good, man. It's not good.
Well, that's the same thing with poker too, right? I mean, when people start playing poker, don't they disappear?
Absolutely. And the guy that I know that does it the most, like, not only are you disappearing doing all that behavior, but he's also fucking losing his livelihood, you know? Like shit, I'm fucking down 500 today.
It's hard to make a living playing poker. I mean, you got to be super good. I mean, all props to those Daniel Negreanu type characters that have been named Phil Ivey and all these guys that,
you
that
like
I hear
poker?
About. I don't play it. I don't like cards. It's not that I don't like cards. It's just it's not something that I'm interested in doing because when I was a kid and I would play pool, the card games would always interrupt the pool action.
Oh, really?
And everybody would be like, Jesus Christ, is this a card place or a pool hall?
Yeah.
Like guys that you would normally get bets with, they wanted to go gamble because that's all pool halls were about. Yeah. All pool halls were about was like hobby people who were into just knocking balls around with their friends who never got good, and then either tournament players or gamblers.
Yeah.
And so the tournament players are usually both tournament players and gamblers. So there's always gambling unless some asshole came around with a deck of cards. Because You can miss when you're playing pool. Yeah. You know, you can miss. You can play on a gaffy table where the pockets are weird, and this guy might know the table better than you do, so he knows what spots to avoid.
Yeah.
But with poker, there's no missing. You're really gambling. You're just gambling. You know, you're using your intelligence, yeah, but you're also gambling.
I don't get poker. Yeah. I don't have the mind for it, man. I'm really not.
Powerful CTO, coconut water. Thank you very much.
I'm not into it, man. I'm intimidated by numbers, and I'm intimidated by just like the game itself. I've never been
drawn. Seems like an awesome game. Yeah. It seems like a real absorbing game, though. It seems like a very, like, you have to really be a bad motherfucker to understand the in and outs of poker and to have, like, you know, years and years of intuition. I mean, those are special dudes. They obviously have special minds. Mm-hmm. Just for me, I was always so absorbed with things that required execution, physical execution as well as, like, mental. And that's why I liked Quake, because it was like this hand-eye coordination thing. That was what I was getting my rocks off on. And that's the same thing with pool. So to me, it's like it was always a physical thing as well as a mental thing. Yeah. I felt like the real thrills to me were when I can combine the two things together. When I could combine a physical experience and a mental experience. Mm-hmm. That's why I liked jiu-jitsu. That's why I liked playing pool. So the card thing was lacking the physical part. There was no execution. I didn't have to execute. So that was, it was like way less exciting. I was like, you can't compare. The difference between when you're watching a guy gambling and he's gambling for $10,000 a set of nine ball and every fucking pocket he's putting his hands on his shirt and blowing on his hands and putting talcum powder on, he's sweating and he's trying to keep it together. You're trying to, like, really gently control how a ball spins and collides with another ball and, you know, make sure that you hit it just enough so that it lands perfectly for the next one, all while you're gambling. You know, I mean, that's what's exciting. When you're sitting there with cards and you know what card to pick, stupid, just pick the fucking card, dude. It's like you win or you don't win. It's like it's not the same loss.
Right.
A guy shoots your nuts in a game of pool. Like if you're playing 10, you're playing a race to 10 and he breaks and runs out 10 games on you, you lose. You don't even get a chance to play. Like that can happen. Has that happened
before? Really?
Not to me, but it has happened in the past.
10 in a row, just run the whole thing.
It's happened more than once.
Wow.
There was one guy who did it for $1 million.
Ooh.
Yeah, they had an insurance policy to see who could run. If you could run 10 racks in a row, which had never been done in a competition before, you could win $1 million. It had only been done like a couple of times. Like Johnny Archer ran 10 and out on Francisco Bustamante. They were gambling, and that was like a legendary story because Francisco Bustamante doubled the bet after Johnny Archer ran 10 and out on him. He was like, this guy can't keep this shit up.
Yeah.
Doubled the bet in the next game, which is really nuts.
Fuck.
And then the other one was this Earl Strickland guy who they had this 10 rack thing where they were insured for $1 million. But the insurance company didn't want to pay because they couldn't believe it had been done. They couldn't believe, like, they found the statistics. No one had ever broken or run out 10 racks ever in any, you know, modern nine ball tournament that they could have on record. So they said, listen, I don't think it's much of a gamble. We'll bet $1 million. If someone does it, they win $1 million. Earl Strickland did it the first fucking tournament they had.
Jesus.
I think it was the first. It was either first or the second. He broke and ran 10 racks like a demon, fired in combinations on the nine ball. I mean, it was ridiculous shit. It was like movie shit. And they denied him. I think he wound up settling, but he never got like the full $1 million.
They denied him, really?
I think he only got like $250,000 or something like that. I hope I'm wrong, but he's like one of the greatest players of all time. And and he gambles too. He does like those action challenges. There's action report matches where they have online. They'll have like just two guys playing for like $25,000. They'll both like put up the money, and then they'll have like a gambling contest.
You ever played what's the other one called? Like, is it
snooker?
Snooker?
No, I've never played that.
Same principle, but smaller
table. Well, right? It requires some incredible fundamentals. There's more room for error in a game pool than there is in snooker. First of all, because a nine ball, like the chosen gambling game, nine ball, the balls are all wild. So what that means is if you miss the one ball in the corner pocket, but it spins around and lands on the side, it still counts. You keep going. When snooker, I don't think that would ever count. I think snooker is like very precise. You know, okay. I think, you know, and you have to move balls. I don't really totally completely understand it. And the table's fucking huge and the balls are tiny and the pockets are tiny as shit. And there's certain ways where you shoot it, it doesn't accept the ball the same way it does on a pool table. Like, I don't think you can cut a ball down the rail the way you can on a regular pool table. So it's a little bit of a different sort of a game. But snooker players notoriously are good at pool. They the top world snooker players, like these English guys,
can kill
Steve
it.
Davis. Yeah, these guys are awesome snooker players, like world champions. They come over to pool, and then eventually they start Ronnie O'Sullivan. Eventually they start fucking up the Americans.
Really,
it takes time. Yeah, well, the Americans, there's like a few high level guys, but the European guys have such a strong team, man. It's like there's so many guys. Like the Americans might have like the best guys of all time, like Johnny Archer, one of the best guys of all time, Earl Strickland, one of the best guys of all time, Shane Van Boning, one of the best guys of all time, and one of the best guys right now. But Europe is like, there's so many fucking players that are killers.
Really?
There's so many. Pool is huge over there, man. It's weird how many good guys. In Asia, they say in Asia, like there's parts of Asia where pool is fucking enormous. The Philippines especially. It's enormous. Like you go there, it's like one of their most, they're like number one behind soccer, I think. I think it's soccer. Are the Philippines into soccer?
Does that make sense?
Or is it baseball? What am I making?
Cricket, maybe? No?
We're just making shit up. Bocce?
No, well, I mean,
slip and slide.
Orange chicken?
I'm amazed by how sports, like, culturally...
evolve.
Well, also how certain places, like, so love a sport and do not give a fuck about another sport.
Yeah. You know?
Like, cricket would be a great example of, like, it's big in some of the islands. It's huge in India, Pakistan... Australia, South Africa. Right. I mean, that shit is like...
Is it a gambling game? Is that why it's big?
I don't know if it's a gambling game, but like you watch it and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And clearly, nobody in this country who's not from one of those countries, like nobody gives
a... I don't know the cricket. Rules.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to follow. Like you see the number, you're like, what? And it's like a 5-day game. You know, you don't understand why they're celebrating.
Pass.
Yeah.
I'd rather do croquet.
I can't get into it. But, you know,
it's
same
so
thing.
Silly.
Billiards, soccer... football, like those are, it's very regional specific people.
Well, I think you get into a game, and then once you get into it, you understand the skill behind it, and then that's what it's so weird, and people are willing to fall into things so odd. Just look at the way baseball uniforms look. Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck are you dressing like? Why do you have to dress like that for this stupid game? You're dressing like you live in a different century. What kind of stupid button-up shirt are you wearing? What the fuck is with
your socks?
The fuck is with your tight pants? If you were just a regular dude walking around with those pants
you're
on the street,
asshole.
I'd say, get the fuck away from my kids.
Yeah.
But because you're playing some
asshole.
Silly game, you have to dress like a pilgrim? This is ridiculous.
This
game's retarded beyond belief.
Yeah, I know.
It needs to be revamped.
It's like one step away from a pirate's fucking outfit.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's a ridiculous game. It's just fucking boring as shit. It takes too long. I can't
like
do
it. I've never
can't
liked
do
it.
It. I liked it. I liked playing it when I was a kid. And when you like playing it, you understand what the skills involved in, you know, hitting a 94-mile-an-hour fastball
that's fucking really skilled. But.
Yeah, catching a ball that's like over the fucking top of the wall.
Yeah.
But who cares?
Yeah. I don't like baseball. I like football. That's by far my favorite sport.
I like women's softball.
Sports are awesome. I'll tell you what, man. Anything that's hard is awesome. Anything where you get into it and you try to express yourself and show your ability to concentrate and focus through a ball or through whatever the fuck it is that you're doing in any sport.
Yeah.
I love watching it. I love watching competition. I love watching people pay off, like hard work paying off. That's like, to me, I want to see that shit all the time. Even tennis. I don't give a fuck about tennis, but I watched some tennis the other day. I just watched it. I was like, whoa, that guy's really trying to hit that ball, and he's really trying to get it. Oh, he's really close.
Impressive.
I don't really give a fuck what's going on because it's not my thing. But if I was a tennis head instead of a pool head, it's the same thing.
It is.
I could have easily gotten hooked on tennis or baseball or golf.
This is a fucking... a golden era for tennis too.
There's some
bad motherfuckers playing.
Really?
Fuck yeah. I mean,
who's that guy? The guy that beat Serena and the other one? What is the other Williams name?
Venus?
Yeah. Venus and Serena. He beat them both.
Really?
Yeah.
A man?
After he played golf, drank beer, and then played 7-1 or whatever the fuck the score
really?
Is. Yeah, beat them both. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
No,
I know
I'll do it. I'll pull it up. It's a famous case.
Federer is, you know, like just amazed. Like if you look at his
He's like one of the all-time best right now, right?
By far, yeah.
Yeah, and they Nadal. Say that he's like they could put him up there with McEnroe in his prime. Oh, any God, of those guys.
Oh, he devastates. Like,
incredible.
Absolutely dominates people.
That's amazing.
And he's been doing it consistently now for just years, man. And Nadal's also up there. And what's his name just retired, Roddick. And everybody was like, if his peer class wasn't so good, he would have won so many more titles. But he just happens to be around in this era of like so many just absolutely dominant tennis players.
Yeah, I don't follow it enough, but I would assume that that's just the case with everything right now, right? I mean, like, so many isn't the case with basketball teams?
Well, here's an example of one where it's not, like the heavyweight boxing division. So people say this is just an era where it's not as competitive and as big. There's not as many big, exciting fighters. So, you know, we don't talk about right now as being the most exciting time. And I mean, you know, boxing in general has taken a dip, but like people have always been drawn to the heavyweight division in boxing. You know, it's the one that people always like big, you know, so the heavyweight boxers right now, you know, I guess you could. The Klitschkos pretty much own it. I mean, part of that you could argue, hey, they're not American, so Americans get excited about American heavyweights, basically. And those guys have been dominant. They're not American. But, you know, the division pretty much has a lot of journeymen, and they go up and they give it a shot, and sometimes the belt switches hands, but it's pretty much the Klitschkos to run through, and people don't talk about this as like, wow, this era right now. You know, heavyweight boxers are.
It's
like,
not a great era.
It's not a great era. No, you know?
It's but, not a, like a Holyfield or Lennox Lewis type era.
And then like another guy would pop up. And yeah. You know, Bo would pop in, and you'd be like, "Oh shit, who's this guy?" And
it's weird that two white guys are running shit.
Running.
two white Russian dudes who are doctors. This are running shit.
Did I tell you I went to this boxing gym in Glendale, and I was a guy there who's like trained a bunch of them, and he said basically like those guys, they train like, all right, 1,000 right crosses,
and like they're willing to do some shit that,
and like if
Americans
one
are not willing
up,
to do,
they're like start that shit over. And so like technically every punch is always exactly like executed, like never off. You watch them, it's just like it's perfect execution, and but it's not exciting.
Before
you know?
Anybody has a chance to get good, they nip them. Yeah. Go get them quick before he gets.
Yeah.
As soon as the guy becomes even remotely into contention, go get him.
And the guy, the trainer guy, was like, he's foreign, so he has this heavy accent, and he's like telling me about like different. He's like, now have you ever fight with a Mexican? You know, they're like dogs. They're just going to fight. I'm like, okay. I was like, do you
Jesus
tell everybody that?
Christ.
Yeah, he's like, but it's
fuck, dude.
It's such that foreign mindset. Right. Of like, this is just how it is.
Just racism is a
and just
no
like
big deal.
He's like, you got to take a Mexican down because they'll never stop fighting. And I'm like,
Jesus
okay.
Christ.
And then he's like, the blacks. Oh, please, just great. And you're like, okay,
but that's great.
Yeah.
What was he? Yeah, he liked fighting black guys.
No, he was like, they're just you know, like he's like, he was talking about Floyd, and he was just like. You know, technically, just fantastic puncher. Like,
oh yeah, Floyd Mayweather does everything perfect.
Perfect,
yeah.
But on top of that, has out of control
reflexes, skills,
and improvising skills,
and he's
defense.
Trained perfectly. I mean, his brother Roger. You know, I mean, his uncle, Roger.
Yeah.
Roger Mayweather was a fantastic boxer. His dad. Was a good boxer.
Fuck about Victor Ortiz.
Yeah.
That was the best soundbite ever from 24/7.
That thing was so ridiculous.
I
that
love
fight.
That, shit.
That fight was so ridiculous. He sucker punched that dude.
Yeah.
The guy's looking at the referee and he's like, bitch, we're still fighting. Crack.
We're fighting, yeah.
Blam.
That was weird of Ortiz though, too.
He's
you know?
A silly bitch.
That was so, and then he kind of gave it up. But then, like, we talked about, what's his name?
I like the way Victor Ortiz fights though, man. That guy's crazy.
Yeah, he's a tough guy.
He just
he's
messed up.
Kid.
He just made an error.
Yeah.
You know?
What's the Filipino? I can't even think right now.
Generoso?
Who's the...
Manny Pacquiao?
Pacquiao.
How like dare you call him the Filipino? One of the greatest boxers in the history of the world.
I just blanked on his name.
Maybe the greatest, if you really think about accomplishments.
But he, you know, like he leaves the ground. Like
He throws his legs into his punches.
Fucking powerful, man.
Woo! He hits so hard. A lot of his power comes from his legs. He's a powerful dude. Manny Pacquiao was a fucking murderous puncher. He when he fought what the fuck's his name? The dude he broke both his eye sockets.
Shit.
Margarito.
Yeah, Antonio.
Yeah. Arbuto, right? Yeah. The guy who was disgraced for using plaster in his knuckles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, he paid that price. Karmically, he paid that price, man. Because Pacquiao beat his fucking eyes in. He beat his eye so bad they had to replace the lens in his eye with an artificial lens.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Did he ever fight again?
Yep. Yeah. Fuck yeah, he did. Yeah, he got back in there.
Jesus Christ, man.
He got back in there and fought Miguel Cotto. And Miguel Cotto was one of the guys who he beat where they suspected he did something to his gloves because he was fucked the dude up, like murderously fucked him up. And he never really did that with anybody. Like, he was just knocking motherfuckers out cold.
Cotto?
No, Margarito.
Oh, Margarito,
before they
found
the plaster in his gloves.
Because he did it to Cotto, though, right?
Didn't he? He did it
to Cotto.
He did the first time, but the second time, Cotto stopped him.
Yeah.
But it was, I think it was like a cut or some shit that stopped him. But Margarito couldn't really hit as hard after they caught him with the plaster.
Yeah, that's
scary shit to think that a guy was like making his career putting rocks in his gloves. Like, what a mean dickhead.
Yeah.
He's totally cheating.
Yeah.
And getting away with it.
And giving you like definitely fucking more aggravated brain damage than you would be getting. You know what I mean? He's hitting you with fucking casts in your face.
Yeah.
Like, that's really shaking up the inside of your head.
There was a fight during the, I think it was the 80s, where a guy had pulled, Panama Lewis had pulled the stuffing out of a guy's gloves.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was this kid, I believe the kid's name was Louis Resto, the boxer. And then the other one was Billy Collins, I think it was. I forget what the guy's name was. But the poor kid had like ended his career.
And the
because he just got bare knuckled in the face. Yeah, well, he crashed into a tree. They think he committed suicide.
And the guy, Panama Red, was
Panama Lewis.
Lewis was suspended like years. The fighter, I don't think he ever fought again. And he denied any, you know, wrongdoing until a few years ago, and he gave it up on camera.
Really?
Yeah. The boxer.
Which fight?
About the fight that you're talking about.
But they found that right away, though.
But the guy that was guilty of, like, the guy who Panama was training.
Yeah, I believe it was Louis Resto.
He denied it and was like, I didn't.
He didn't know.
That he didn't know. Exactly. Like, it was an accident. And,
so that's silly. And you would family, know what the first punch you threw.
His family always had his back, like they're like, you know, it wasn't on him. And then on camera with his family there, he was like, no, I know what I did.
Oof.
And they're just devastated. Yeah,
that's a terrible thing to live with, man. That's not just cheating, that's like, oh, that's horrific, man.
Yeah, you basically, you know,
you ruined a guy's life.
Yeah, you did
ruined a guy's life, a guy who was really good at competing under a set of rules, and you just fucking totally hijacked the whole thing on TV, you stupid fuck.
Yeah,
on TV, beat a guy up with no padding in your gloves.
That's unreal. So you just bare knuckled,
crazy, just, you cheated. Yeah. Cheating asshole.
Isn't it crazy that you still get all these guys every single year in every sport that all still cheat? And you know, the Olympics, they took somebody's medal was, you know,
one guy had marijuana in his system.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the motherfucker
had weed in his system.
Yeah, some skier or some shit.
That's not a skier. I can see.
Someone got kicked off the team for weed. Was it judo? Oh, there was a judo guy. It was a judo guy who got kicked off.
But you see the performance enhancing shit, and you're like, how are you still, like, you know they're going to come after you, man.
There's a lot of different shit that people are doing that they've got away with in the past, I think, and they're slowly starting to clamp down on that thing.
And fucking Armstrong.
Well, that's crazy. Well, the crazy thing about Armstrong is he's only done by this one, like, it's an American thing that's gone after
him. United States.
Anti-doping, whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
But that has nothing to do with the Tour de France. So when they say that he doesn't have the eight Tour de France, notice I say France.
Yes.
Sophisticated. I've been to the airport in Paris. But when they're saying that
I thought they did have jurisdiction. I thought so, because I mean, everything that I saw was he was stripped of his seven titles.
I've heard that he was stripped by these people, that they don't recognize it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he was necessarily stripped by the whoever the fuck puts on the Tour de France.
He definitely did what they said he did.
Though. You think so?
Look Absolutely. At you,
Tommy Guns.
100%. I do not believe in these witch hunts for like people that are essentially like heroes and super like nobody accuses you know Michael Jordan of having done this. Nobody accuses you know Joe Montana of having done this. They do it because it's there. His teammates have all come clean about it. They've all said we all did this shit. Everybody, and then when you finally have your chance, to be like, this is the last. He's like, you know what? Enough's enough. Really? Enough's enough? That's the. I'm just tired of fighting this fight. Well, you have a chance now. This is your fine. This is the like the final lap of the race. This is when you go. I'm just, you know what, the man at some point just...
Well, he's been, in his defense, he's been defending it for years.
But you give up and let them like take your name and ruin your name.
Well, do you
like
know
that?
That he has passed, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but do you know that he's passed like 500 drug tests?
Yes, I do. Yeah. But why is there a witch hunt to get somebody like that? I don't...
This is what gets me. You ever see a dude who's like killed his wife and he's on the news and they're accusing him of you know, like, why'd you do it? And he's like, I didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, that is not how you would react if your wife was killed and they were dragging you off and you were innocent. You would be freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you lost, what happened? You lost your loved one?
Yeah.
You're a crazy person. You're a crazy person that they caught doing something.
Yeah. So, but like, you think that they would go after him though if there wasn't any evidence to support that?
I don't know, like how?
No, I'm saying, like, do you, like, for Lance, right? Like, Lance.
I mean, I don't know what they can do. I mean, I think once he's passed the drug test, he passed, like, 500 fucking drug tests.
But they're,
like,
they're
what
claiming...
But here's the thing. Where's the evidence? What do you have? Do you have any of his blood, and you can run it through a machine and find some shit that we didn't find before? If you don't have that, then what are you doing?
I think they do have
They probably have that.
But if they do have that, that would be... No, they would have said they had that. If they do have that, they would put that shit in the news. They would tell you what it is. It's not something that you can keep a secret.
They have some sample, because some sample was referenced.
Was some sample referenced because he tested positive for EPO? Was it that? I feel like he tested positive for something. But whatever the fuck it is, you should have either got him back then, or you need to let it go and realize that now with your new super sophisticated methods of testing, he might not have passed those tests before. But guess what? He did.
Yeah.
Let's fucking move on.
Yeah. Well,
you know, leave the guy alone. I mean, you're going to ruin his life because he did exactly what everybody else did. He just was better at it because that's what happened.
So, but if they were after him, you have to assume that he's a real motherfucker.
Here's my question, though, man. Why does he have to tell anybody that he was, if they were all doping? Okay, and that's what we're assuming that's the case. We're assuming that everyone at the top of the list, and by the way, a lot of the doping does not necessarily even have to be unhealthy, like the blood transfusions. That's not unhealthy. Blood doping is not unhealthy. It just is an inordinate amount of blood in your body. You have a much more easy way of producing oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
You can process oxygen better. That's why being dehydrated is so bad for your cardio.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of the most important things for, you know, outdoor exercise. Well, that was, I think that was, fuck, how would they describe it? It's, I just don't think any of them can achieve the highest level without doing at least some of that. If it's not blood doping, if it's not taking EPO, if it's not taking, you know, some fucking roots that boost your testosterone that are legal today but won't be legal in 6 months from now when they find out about it. It seems like if everybody is doing it at the very top of the list, if all those guys on his team got busted, I can only make sense that he could do it too.
Right.
He
had so to I, do I it just too. Think that for me, the assumption that I make, and I realize that I'm not privy to any of the like evidence or information, but the assumption that I make is if all these guys say he did it, that he worked with all his former teammates. Everybody says it, and then the doping agency is so adamant about pursuing it. Like, what? Why? Why would you do this if there's nothing there?
Right.
Why are you trying to get the generally that doesn't happen. People don't go after somebody just because.
Do you think that's because like prosecutors sort of get a wild hair across their ass and like we're gonna go get this guy and then it becomes like a competition?
It could be. That's definitely possible, and they get you know, that obviously happened like in that Duke lacrosse case where the prosecutor there was like he made a fucking show of it, like we're gonna before even like reviewing what like the information and the evidence,
right?
And then he paid a huge price because he was boasting and trashing them before they even got in a courtroom and ended up fucking losing his license to practice. But I think part of that, what he did before, was from that charge he got of like, I'm going to put these rich entitled kids fucking in their place. Watch this right now.
Yeah.
And then it came back to bite him. So yeah, I think there is partly some of that people going after the big name, but I just don't see, them trying to do this to him for no reason. I just don't see.
I agree with you, but I don't know what the reasons are. I feel like if the guy passed that many drug tests,
yeah.
I mean, if everybody was doing what he was doing, if that's what they're saying, mm-hmm. was he just better in spite of the doping? If everybody was doping and he was the best?
He's a super talented
actor. Yeah, clearly he's unbelievably disciplined.
Yeah.
So if you're telling me they all doped,
yeah.
Isn't that not a level playing field then?
It's like the baseball argument. They're saying this is like the asterisk whatever era.
Yeah.
Because like at first it was like a few guys and then a few more, and then you're like, hold on, did everybody just juice for like this 5 or 10 year period?
Right.
And it's looking like a huge percentage where it's not even news anymore.
Right.
When you find out that like all the big superstars did it, you know?
Yeah.
All of them.
It's crazy.
All the home run records were broken in that era.
When you look at Mark McGwire now and you hear him talk about it and you hear him, you know, he's like broke down when he was describing what he did.
You look at the best is when you see like when he was like an Oakland A, Bash Brothers era, and you see him and he's like, you know, he's like 6'4" and he looks like a fucking pencil.
Dude, I did a TV show with him.
Did you really?
He was on an episode of Hardball back when he was really skinny, man.
Super thin.
He was young. Yeah. This is the pre-HGH days.
And he turned into a gorilla.
He just went crazy with that working out. But mm-hmm. but look at the dividends, man. All of a sudden, he's just pulverizing balls.
Yeah.
Just boom.
But Bonds, too. When you see Bonds
Canseco?
In his Pirates uniform. Jesus Christ. And then you see him in his Giants shit. It's fucking ridiculous.
Do you remember how big Canseco was?
Yeah, he's a monster.
Dude, I was working in the Boston Athletic Club when I was 19, and Canseco was in town, and he needed somewhere to work out. And they must have been staying close to the Boston Athletic Club, so they came down and worked out. And that guy walked through the door. I was like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like, on TV with their silly 1860s outfits on, they don't look that big.
Yeah.
But when that guy walked through the room, I'm like, he's like 300 pounds. He's fucking huge. I mean, he might not have been 300, but he was like well over 250. He was enormous.
I remember the first time when I was like, holy shit, at the size of some like fucking humans.
Yeah.
I was in high school and I played in high school football like 2 hours north of Miami.
Uh-huh.
And I went with a friend of mine on like a recruiting trip with like his trip down to the University of Miami, and we're standing on the field and the players run out of the tunnel, and I'm looking at dudes in their chest, like I'm standing there looking at the numbers, and I'm like, holy fuck, I could never play against guys like this. Like dudes that were like 6'6", 330, and I was like, these are fucking animals running around, man.
Like, did people like that exist 100 years ago?
I don't think so.
One of the reasons why I think they might have, like, every now and then, there was a guy that was the heavyweight champion. His name was Primo Carnera,
mm-hmm.
and he was a, like, legit giant. He was fucking enormous. But, like, the best guys, let me see how big Primo Carnera was. I think he was the biggest heavyweight champion ever, I think, up until, like, at least, like, modern times, because I think there was some fucking giant Russian dude recently that was even bigger than that.
Yeah.
But, I think this guy lived in like the 50s, I believe it was. Yeah. He lived until 1967. So he was 7'1".
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh no. Okay. No, this guy's 6'7". The Russian guy that I was talking about is 7'1". His name Nikolai Valuev. He's 7'1". Holy shit. So these guys were giants back then, but Carnera was only 6'7".
That's still a big motherfucker.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, up until that time, he was the tallest heavyweight in history. And I think today, like, what are the Klitschkos?
They're like 6'6".
Yeah, they're like the same size.
Fucking dudes.
Yeah, they're like the same size. So this Primo Carnera back then, he was like a freak.
Yeah. I did what was it? I did this fundraiser.
He was 275 pounds. This guy was naturally,
and he that was like, by the way, the biggest size of any athlete.
Yeah,
through like the 80s. Like in the 80s, like I remember that like linemen in the NFL were 275, 280, and every team would have like a 300 pounder, and you'd be like, holy shit, they got a 300 pounder on the team. And now the entire line.
What the fuck is that? Is that human growth hormone? What is that? Is that steroids in the beef?
I don't. It's something.
Is that what that is?
It's standard now. Everyone's 320, 330.
But what's happening? Is it selective growing? What is it?
Is it
cell phones?
Is it this is the first couple of generations where they really understood nutrition and made sure the kids have vitamins growing up and they grew to their full potential? Is that what it is?
Part of it is that.
I bet that has to do a lot with it, right?
Yeah, I think that is part of it. Yeah. And also, but now you have this thing where it's like there's more education on just, you know, like for instance in sports, everybody has like, you can be like, hey, I want to be this weight, and they're going to program, you need fucking 300 grams of protein a day, and you need 5,000 calories,
yeah,
and you need to do this type of workout, and you're going to fucking swell up, you know? You can actually set that goal, and somebody can tell you pretty much, manufacture it, like, in with knowing their science, this is what you need to do to if you want to obtain that. So you can execute that, you know?
Right.
But back then, they'd just be like, fucking, I don't know.
Yeah, there's definitely that. Like, you can definitely put on more size now than ever before. But what I'm saying is that the actual number of giant humans has increased.
Yeah, you're
it's not just, like, the ability to put muscle on. It's like the size of people is just... It's more common to see these primo carnera guys in athletics today. These 6'7", just naturally gigantic human beings.
Huge.
Like that's more common today. It just is. So what the fuck is that? Why is it more common? Why is there two Klitschko's? There's two giant 6'6" guys who are boxing everybody up. These two giant Russian dudes. You know, just think about how many of those guys exist today. There's how many giant human beings are out there. There's a dude who fights in the UFC, Stefan Struve. He's fucking 7 feet tall, man.
Kid's 7 feet.
Yeah, I don't even think he's 25. 7 feet tall. God, you know,
the world is not designed for you when you're 7 feet tall,
dude,
man.
He's giant. Semi Schultz, he's another one. 7 feet tall. These giant kickboxers. Jesus Christ. Where and I guarantee you, kids that are coming up today, the kids that are growing up and are going to be, you know, coming to fruition or coming to a full height, rather, within the next decade, they're going to be even more giant. It's like people are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger till we, like, start morphing, you know?
Into,
we
like,
start
super giants.
Yeah, we're going to be giants. There's no doubt about it, man. As soon as they figure out a way to engineer the body selectively, we're going to figure out what's the optimum size you can be, and people are just going to grow to that size.
You know, you're right that like 100 years ago there was not a fucking bunch of 6'6", 300 pound people.
Do you know how much the average soldier weighed in the Civil War?
How much?
125 pounds.
Yeah.
They were tiny little dudes.
That's Tommy as a fifth grader.
Yeah, that is not the same type of human being that we have today. Because people were malnourished. Yeah. Everybody's catching fucking diseases. There's shit all over everything. Babies are dying. Nobody knows how to wash their hands right. It's a mess. That was a mess. Those are tiny ass little people. Those people who lived in the 1800s are tiny ass little people.
Now we just have gargantuan people.
And they're getting bigger. These Shaquille O'Neal dudes. I did a Fear Factor with Shaquille O'Neal, and I stand dick height on Shaquille O'Neal. He's a grown man. I'm a grown man. His dick is in my face. Yeah. I mean, he's just so different than me.
That's like a great quote, by the way.
Yeah. I'm standing next to him. We do a countdown. It's hilarious because it's me. You know, I was like, Shaq, count him down. He goes 3, 2, 1 go, and you know the people go and do their stunt. It was really cool because he liked the show, so it was fun like having him co-host with me for a day.
Sure.
But it's just so ridiculous. I'm like ridiculous. A little child standing next to this giant. Super nice guy though, by
Jonathan
the way.
Ogden, offensive tackle, 6'8", like 340 played at, and his hand, he just held two of my little fingers and was like, nice to meet you. And just squeezed a couple fingers, and I realized my hand couldn't even like get around, like even simulate a handshake.
Yeah.
And he also like had a conversation with somebody, like as I was talking to him, like down here. I was like, yeah, so it's cool to meet. He was like, yeah, man. So this other thing. And I was like, I'm down. I'm like down. I was like, hey, man. Like a kid, like when your kid walks up to you and they're talking to you and you're talking to another adult and you're like, just hold on. And you're talking to the adult and they're like, but daddy. And you're like, just hold on. And you just talk over them. He did that to me like I was a child. And then I just looked up at him and I was like, it's nice to meet you. He like patted the top of my head.
Yeah, man, go about your business.
It was not like a human, though. It was like a fucking superhuman.
Yeah, it's amazing the variance, you know, how much people vary in height and, you know, size like that, but yet we're still in the same species.
Yeah.
But a guy like Shaquille O'Neal, it's like, it's such an extreme version of it.
Fucking huge.
It's a friendly guy, though. Super, super nice guy. Yeah. Mike Goldberg did a whole season of Shaq verses with him.
Oh, yeah.
He did a bunch of different shit. Like, that he would go box Oscar De La Hoya, and, you know, it was kind of funny. He did a bunch of different things.
I am, do you know the comic Bruce? Do you know him?
Yes.
He's a big dude. Big, enormous guy. Not that tall, but probably like 300 plus pounds.
Right.
I sat next to him on a flight. Did I tell you this already?
No.
And I'd never met him before, and I recognized him. So I was like, hey, man, like, you know, I'm a comic. And he was like, oh, yeah, he's super fucking nice. And he's just this big, giant looking dude.
Can I guess where this story goes?
Where?
Sleep apnea.
No.
Okay.
No. It's you know,
10 minutes into the flight.
He's got braids and shit. So we get delayed. And first of all, we're flying L.A., Atlanta, and then I'm going on to Lauderdale. He's staying in, he lives in Atlanta, I guess. So everybody that comes on the plane, who's black, says something to him. And I'm like, do you know these people? He was like, nah, man, like these people they're just fans. And I was like, like everybody on the plane has stopped. And they tell us there's a delay. You can get off the plane if you want. And some girl walks by and she's like, do you need something? And he's like, ah, I'd love like a candy bar. And she's like, okay. And I'm like, who's that? He's like, I don't know. So that lady's just buying you candy, man? He was like, yeah, pretty much. I was like, okay.
Whoa.
And sweet, like, I can't tell you how sweet a guy he is. So we get the lady, the girl comes back, gives him candy. I'm like, just, I love you. And he's like, thank you, sweetie. She goes back. We take off. We start talking comedy. And he's like, I'm doing this tour with, you know, I'm touring with this person. I'm doing shows with these people. And I'm asking him, like, oh, what do you think of so-and-so? And we're talking back and forth about people. And he's like, I'm doing this show right now where I'm, you know, I'm doing some theaters with Mike Epps. I'm opening like for him at these massive theaters. And I was like, Mike Epps is a funny fucking dude, like just a naturally funny guy. Because we're just like talking shit.
Right,
he's
right.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. I was like, you know, that guy just turned any situation funny. He's like, yeah, but ain't no motherfucker funnier than Andy Griffith. And I was like, what? Like, what'd you just say? And he's like, Andy Griffith. I was like, are you not talking
Eddie Griffin.
Right. Are we talking about Andy, like the whistle shit? Yeah. He's like, oh, man. And I'm like, are you serious right now? And he's like, you ever been to the Andy Griffith Museum? I'm like, what kind of question is that, man? Like, what?
What kind of question is that?
And he's like, oh, man, they got the car from the show. You can sit in the car. They have like a set, like with the kitchen. They used to show the kitchen. You can go there. You get all the Andy Griffith shit you ever want. I'm like, are we in the real world right now?
He loves Andy Griffith.
Man, I was like, I don't think I like anything as much as you like Andy Griffith. He's like, I love Andy Griffith. And I was like, clearly. And he knew, he was like, you know, and I'm not exaggerating. He was like, you know, there was two black actors that ever appeared on the Andy Griffith show. And I was like, wow. He's like, one was February 8th, 1963.
What?
By the role of Tony.
Are you saying the right date or you just
no,
making up
I'm
the
making
date?
Up the date, but he knew the date.
Let these people know.
All right, he knew the date.
They're going to
fuck
this up in Google.
He knew the exact date and he knew the role and the episode. And then he was like, and the other one was April 19th, 1968. And that was when, remember when they couldn't find the mail? I'm like, no, I have not seen these episodes.
What the fuck? Remember when they couldn't find the mail?
I was like, I swear to God. And I was like,
holy shit.
He's like, Andy Griffith is a shit, man. I was like, Andy Griffith, really?
Andy Griffith is a shit.
He fucking loves Andy Griffith, man.
Wow. No. There's a lot of people that are like, that pay homage to the classics.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's dudes who really get into like old movies and TV shows. And
I mean, I've met like super fans of some things where you don't expect, but that for me was so out of left field.
I saw Carol Burnett the other day.
You did?
Yeah. She looked good. She looked good. I'm telling you, man. I mean, I think the lady is in her late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
She looked very healthy. Did smiling, laughing, talking done? To people.
She that show was great.
Yeah, it was a great show. It was interesting. We were talking about this the other day. Like there was like a big wave of woman run shows back in the day where the woman was a star. There was Laverne and Shirley. There was Mary Tyler Moore. There was Rhoda. Mm-hmm. There was Maude. Remember Maude? You know. Mm-hmm. And then there's Maude. And then there's Maude. Right on, Maude. You don't remember that? That was a show. That was like a big popular show. And then there was the older lady who used to be a model, who ran the newsroom. The fuck was that?
Oh yeah.
Boring ass.
Murphy Brown.
Murphy Brown. That boring ass hypnotic. What did they do to get people to watch that show for all those years?
Yeah,
what kind of
long time.
Hypnotism program
Roseanne?
Did they run?
That Roseanne? Was the show.
95.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a gang of them. But I mean, that the era of Carol Burnett was like, there was a lot of Lucille Ball. There was a bunch of them. There was a bunch of them, like really strong women comedian presences.
Yeah.
It's like that has changed quite a bit now. Like the role that women have on these, like, you know, you have like girls like Chelsea who have their own show, mm-hmm. you know, but it's like her personality. It's not like like her being the head of a sitcom.
Right.
And then there's
Whitney.
Who had a show that people didn't respond to that well, but then people said, well, it's going to be tweaked and they're going to figure it out. But genuinely people seem to like her. She just has to find like the right vehicle. Right. But how many of them are there these days? It's not like it used to be.
Yeah. Especially also where they need to, you know, where they're getting their shot. You know what I mean? Like, you know, how many people are getting the opportunity to have their show? You know,
because the
talent, there's still talent. There's a bunch of talent out there. Like, you know, there's definitely talented comics, female, male comics out there, but they have to get a shot to get their show. That seemed to be like, that was an overdrive in that era that you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like if you were
of women,
of women, but also I think just comics too. Like there's an era of pushing the comic to get the show. And here's the thing that's funny that you, when you're like, why, how come not that many stand up, let's say, have a show right now?
Right.
Like where it's like an extension of the comic. You look back on that era and all of those shows were hits. Like the stand up where the comic was elite, a lot of those were hits, man.
Yeah, there was a few bombs though. I was there for a few.
Yeah, but
I watched a few. I was a part of a few. I had my own sitcom pilot for NBC once. Yeah, it was called Overseas. I don't even think it ever aired anywhere, even as a pilot.
You shot the pilot, though?
Yeah, it was a super expensive pilot. But the thing about like those development deals they try to do with stand-ups mm-hmm. is that they would just throw a bunch of money at a comic
mm-hmm.
and then get a bunch of like, you know, writers that supposedly had some success on other shows and throw as much shit against the wall and see how much of it sticks.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's real hard for you to take the one thing that you're fucking awesome at, which is stand up, the one thing that you really can completely express yourself, you're uncensored, you're producing it, you're directing it, nobody's interfering with your vision of how the joke should play out. And there's a big difference between that and being on a sitcom set. And that difference is it's really fun being on a good sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible being on a bad sitcom. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And it's not as much fun and it's not as rewarding as doing stand up. It's just not. You know, for me at least.
Yeah.
It's like it's fun doing like a cool sitcom, but if I had a choice between watching like the best sitcom ever or watching Richard Pryor do stand up, I want to watch Richard Pryor. That's the best stuff. The best stuff is stand up. So it's like you do shit that's not as good as the best stuff and it's just because they're paying you to do it. That was how I was feeling about it. And the thing that you don't really love to do and that they're paying you to do takes all day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have as much energy or time left over for the thing that you do love to do.
I can see that.
So the only reason why you should do it is to get exposure for your stand-up.
Yeah, which I hear, like, I mean, some of the comics that really like doing comedy, doing stand-up, that's, you know, generally what you hear them say is, like, it's just going to drive more people to see my show.
Yeah, that's how it should be. That's how it should be, man. That's how it should be. It's the art of stand-up comedy didn't get any respect for a while in the 80s, I think, as an end destination because everybody was like, you got to get a sitcom. That's what Jerry Seinfeld did.
When did
that's
you do
what
your,
this guy did.
Your pilot did. In terms of like your career? Like,
I did it in the middle of news radio.
Oh, in the middle
while of While I was doing news radio. Yeah, because it was the same producer. So see, and that show spoiled the shit out of me, man, because they were so good. The writers were so good, and they were crazy. They were so nuts. They wouldn't even start a script till like 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, and they would show up, and it would be like tape day, rehearsal day, and we would get like the first 30 pages, and they were like, or the first 5 pages or whatever it was. Yeah. They're like, we're gonna give you the rest later. And then scene two would come down at noon, and they would shuffle down barefoot and slap it down. They would go back, and they would get to this state of sleep deprivation and come up with this really silly shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect it was because nobody had informed them about the benefits of weed.
Really?
Yeah. I think if those guys were stoners, they weren't stoners. If those guys were stoners, what they did sober was brilliant. You know, if those guys were high, they could have come up with the most silly and ridiculous show in the history of the universe.
How many seasons was that show on for?
5 seasons.
5?
Yeah.
I thought it was longer even.
No, it was just too short of syndication, like the normal syndication length.
Oh, man.
It is in syndication.
Oh, it is in syndication.
But it's two episodes short. We only did 98 instead of 100. Yeah. You're supposed to have 100 so that they can sell it.
Yeah.
But it didn't become popular until after it was canceled.
Really?
It became popular when it would air on TV during like regular TV time, like 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock and late night and shit like that when it was syndicated. And then people were like, this show's kind of fucking funny.
Yeah.
It just got monkeyed around back then, man. Back in the day when news radio was out, nobody knew where the fuck you were. If they moved you from like Monday to Wednesday, you're done, kid. Nobody knows.
The other thing, like more to your point about the, you know, when you're just in charge of your stand-up.
Yeah.
With shows, man, you're talking about so many people are giving their input. You know, like the executives, the producers, the writers, like it's so many people. We should really do this. We should really lose that. We should really do this.
Well, I don't like it when you come out that way. Yeah. I don't like it when you do that. Mm-hmm. I don't like it when you stop. Oh, please. Boy. I don't care. We can only do this one way.
Yeah.
You know, and the only way I'm gonna get advice is from funny people. I can't get advice from someone who's a business person. It's like, I just gotta tell you that I think that approaching it this way.
When they give you a comedy note, that's just like...
I had a conversation with a guy, and he was talking about a podcast. And he goes, you guys have really nailed down your brand. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ew.
That's gross language.
Ew. Yeah. You're gross.
Yeah.
That's the last thing we've done. Nailed down our brand. Ew.
Yeah.
He's like, you know... I go, what do you mean by that? It's like, well, you know... People know what kind of, you know, what you're putting out there. It's like, you know, you've really like well defined your brand.
Mm-hmm.
Ew.
I'm a guy.
Why my brand? I'm a dude. What is that?
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about?
They love silly that though.
Bitch. It's like showbiz talk. Well, we're working on his development deal, but we just don't want to sign with anyone. Mm-hmm. We really want to work on developing his brand.
Yeah,
can you get my brand? Are you a bottle of ketchup? You fuck.
Define.
Why
who
do you
I
need
am,
a brand?
You who
silly,
are you?
You silly bitch.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous.
If you're that defined, then you become immobile. You become locked into an Emo Phillips type character.
Oh yeah.
Imagine going to see Emo Phillips and he tries to do straight stand up. You're like, hey, fuckhead. Why aren't you acting like you're poisoned?
Weird it up, man.
Weird it up, shithead. What's this you just standing there telling me about butter, okay? Get a move on. I came to see your fucking funky act.
I love it, man.
Well, if you're not going to do it, where's Judy Tenuta?
Yeah, I want to see your weird shit.
Yeah, I'm here to see your hey, oh, did you ever notice? How do you go from doing that to trying to do just regular stand-up? I only give him shit because I know he tells his opening acts not to swear.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, I've heard... From dudes who vote. I don't know exactly. I wasn't really there. They could have been a bunch of bitter twats.
Yeah.
But I don't remember who it was. They said he got harassed for being too dirty and opening for him.
Man, that sucks.
It might have been Heffron. God, I wish I remember who it was.
What happened to Heffron?
I've had it. I've
gotta
had
get
it,
him back in here, man.
I've had it said passive aggressively.
I love Heffron.
Before to me, you know, opening for somebody. Like, you say fuck a lot, huh? And you're like, oh, do I? And they're like, oh, no, it's not a thing. And you're like, oh, you just made it a thing. Because you just hinted that it is a thing.
In Boston, they used to like always decide, like headliners would decide who would open for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, you know, they'd get him out of here, breaks the fuck meter. It was like, that was like the big thing. They didn't want to go on after anybody dirty.
Yeah.
Because if you wanted to have any sort of shock value to your comedy whatsoever, but that just means your comedy's not that good.
Yeah.
That's how I always felt.
Sure.
The best guys can go on after anybody. It doesn't matter.
I've always seen. Yeah.
It's just, especially when people know who they are. Like, I got a chance to see Hedberg a bunch of times, and I saw Hedberg in front of people who were fans, and I got to see a Hedberg in front of people who had no idea who he was.
This episode is brought to you by Dr. Squatch. Look, it's important to take care of yourself, and it's equally important that you use the right products, like Dr. Squatch. They have high-performing natural soaps and more with no harmful ingredients, so you can look and smell your best. Try their Pine Tar Bar Soap and Lotion, Bay Rum Deodorant, or Woodland Pine Cologne. Most of their scents are available across multiple products, so if you really like it, you can get a whole lineup. And right now, they have an amazing offer for new customers. Get 20% off your first purchase of any amount or a subscription order by going to drsquatch.com/JRE or use the code JRE at checkout.
And there's a big difference.